First thing is listen to them. If you're the leader and you don't listen, you have a pattern of cutting people off, changing the topic in the middle of the stream. That tells people you don't really care about their input. But that team leader, business leader, could become a better facilitator. And by facilitation, you can lead people who are more junior to have more confidence.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one to self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Diana Boer. Here's three facts that I think you should know about her. One, she is the author of 50 books and all published by major U.S. publishers, including Penguin Random House, Simon & Schuster, HarperCollins, McGraw-Hill. Yep, those are the big ones. And available in 62 foreign editions. Two, as a communication consultant, a presentation coach, and a book writing coach, Diana has among her clients more than one-third of the Fortune 500 organizations. Three, Diana hosts Boer Book Camps, where she helps professionals develop their own bestsellers to get their intended message out into the world. Oh, and here's a bonus fact. Diana has never bought anything at a Starbucks. She may be the only person in the country not to have done so. Diana Boer, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you, George. It's great to be with you again.
Delighted to be talking with you again. It's been a while since we talked, and glad to do it. And yes, the no Starbucks purchase, I've learned it's not a political statement of any kind. You just don't drink coffee.
I don't drink coffee. That's right. Mm. So I see no point in tempting myself with all the other great things they offer.
That's true. Why walk in there and waste, overpriced on everything, of course. Diana, today we're talking about 50 books. There were so many things, so many topics we could choose from. Today we're talking about how business leaders can feel and look more confident when they are speaking, whether it's a presentation or whether it's simply a meeting discussion. When you work with your clients to help them look and feel more confident, where do you start?
Well, there are a lot of places to start, but since you mentioned we're not just focusing on presentations, but on speaking up in a meeting, let me just start with that one. I think, a lot of times people walk out of a meeting saying, well, I suggested that, but they just ignored it. Nobody picked up on it. And then somebody said something about it 10 minutes later and he got credit or she got credit for the idea. And I think sometimes that happens because when people do speak up, they are not organized in their thinking. And they don't set themselves up to hold the floor. In other words, they set themselves up to be interrupted. And what I mean by that, setting yourself up to hold the floor, is let's say there's a discussion underway and you have some ideas on it, or maybe you have some reservations about what they're talking about. A way to set yourself up would be to say, before we go on, I'd like to mention three reasons that I think this may stall the project rather than aid it. And once you give that little overview, I've got three reasons here, then they're going to let you finish. When you start with the first reason you object to the idea and somebody says, well, wait a minute, you could say, excuse me, let me finish. I have three reasons. And you can go ahead. So with that opening statement about what you intend to do, your intended message, in other words, with speaking up, then that helps people not interrupt until you've made your point.
And I can see that. And when you tell people there are three reasons, they're more likely to listen because it sounds right off the bat that you're organized.
Right, right. And even if you're just sharing an experience, you want to overview to say, actually, I have some reservations about the action you're proposing here. One, based on a personal experience I had with that supplier 2 years ago. Now, again, with that overview statement, they say, don't interrupt her in the middle of this. This is her reason, and she's building her case. And then if they do, again, you can just say, pardon me, with some body language as well as with your words, pardon me, let me finish this experience and how it turned out.
And I'm hearing valuable advice there with the phrase, pardon me, let me finish, let me finish.
Yes.
Because it's so easy to be interrupted and people shut down when they're interrupted.
That's right. And so just saying, you can do it very courteously by saying, please let me continue, or please let me add the other two reasons that I mentioned earlier. And then people feel the rest of the group identifies with you, because then they realize, oh, somebody just cut you off before you got to make your case. And of course, you want to be concise, because if you're the type of person that you say, I've got three reasons, and they go, oh, you know, their eyes roll over because they know you're not concise from past experience, that's a problem as well. But, you know, George, there are a lot of other ways to show your confidence that's not particularly linked to a meeting.
Diana, you teased us. Tell us what some of those ways might be.
Well, one that's sort of universally applicable is in your body language. When you start to speak, if you picture somebody right now standing up to give a briefing or something in your conference room, there's a group gathered. If they look like they're conferring on their notes, their eyes are downcast, they're fidgeting, they're stepping back and forward, stepping back and forth, that's nervous movement. And that tells you that they're not confident about what they're about to say. That may not be your intention. That may not be what you're thinking, but that's how people interpret. They interpret monotonous or repetitive gestures. Like some people just kind of swirl their hands around often, or they'll put their hands in the pocket, out of the pocket, in the pocket, out of the pocket, or they take one step forward, one step back, one step forward, one step back. I used to call that, when I was teaching classes on presentation skills, the dance step, you know, the two-step. Your body language communicates, I'm confident, I believe in what I'm about to say, I have some great information that's going to be useful to you. Or it says, I'm really not quite sure that this is going to land correctly, or I've got the right points with the right audience. They're picking up all of that from the moment you stand up in your chair, from your chair to walk to the front of a conference room, to being on stage, seeing you walk up. You know, I don't care if you were a celebrity speaker and walking down an aisle to music. You either look confident and like you're relaxed and going to enjoy the time with them, or you don't. And that communicates a great deal.
Will the body language always tell the truth?
Most of the time, yes. Most of the time. It's very hard to fake body language. You can fake words. And some people have learned to fake some body language, maybe having a blank face. You know, we talk about putting on your game face. They can put on a blank face. But for the most part, if you know what their normal body language is, and then you see them when they're uncomfortable, you will recognize that language.
Normal versus uncomfortable. The uncomfort might be signaled by what?
Some of the body language varies by culture. Downcast eyes in some cultures means I'm showing respect. I don't want to look direct in your eyes. But in our culture, in the Western part of the world, direct eye contact means I'm telling you the truth and I believe in what I'm saying. When you just look ill at ease, and we can tell when somebody, the trunk of their body is stiff, or their shoulders are rounded forward as opposed to straight back, all of that conveys nervousness. Again, unless you know that person, and that's always the way they are. And to help people recognize what their normal body language is, whether they're standing or sitting, I suggest they catch themselves in a relaxed setting. Let's say they're out to dinner on a Friday night and they're telling a story. Oh, you wouldn't believe what happened to me when I went into the dry cleaners. And they're really relaxed there. Most of the time, they'll have natural facial expression. They'll be using their hands appropriately, and their posture will be very relaxed. But when they all of a sudden stand up in front of the room to make a presentation, then they're very stiff and they don't have gestures. So try to be aware of what your normal body language is when you're relaxed and comfortable with friends, and then be able to duplicate that in front of a group.
How do you train your body to look comfortable when you might feel anxious in front of the group?
Well, I think practicing is one thing. There are some tiny, I would call it body language tweaks that you could actually just think about doing and then look at yourself in the mirror and you can see how much more confident. One is standing on the balls of your feet. When you are standing up to present or speak or even in the hallway in a conversation, if you tend to slouch and you keep your feet flat on the floor, you will tend to be laid back and slouchy in your posture, not necessarily alert. And you want to look alert and into and involved and engaged with what you're saying. But just thinking, when you start to do a presentation, I'm going to put my weight on the front part, the balls of my feet, and stand there. You will look much more energetic. And so I suggest to your listeners, they actually try that. Get in front of a mirror and stand on the balls of their feet and maybe even bounce slightly. They will see the difference in the energy level that they are communicating. And of course, another thing is how you gesture with your arm, your hands. And that is, if you have small gestures and you're gesturing primarily right in front of you like this, it's a nervous fidget, really, rather than an emphasis. You want to use a gesture to emphasize a key point. Let's say you're talking about climbing the corporate ladder and you're using that gesture that links with the content of what you're saying, then that makes sense. And so if you could just remember that most of the time when you gesture with your arms, if you will lift from your shoulder as opposed to lifting from your wrist or moving from your wrist or elbows, when you just hold your elbows in tight to the trunk of your body and barely move those out and you're just waving your arms around in a circle, that is a nervous fidget as opposed to a gesture that emphasizes the point that you're making. If you could just remember those two things, when I gesture, make it intentional, lift it from my shoulder, point up to a slide, point to the back of the room or the door if you're talking to other people, intentionally with your whole arm, not just your hand. That will make a huge difference in how confident you look.
So larger movements look more confident.
Yes, taking up more space. I mean, if you think about it, you walk into a room and somebody who's walked in, they put either their iPad or their laptop right in front of them, and then they throw a jacket over the next chair, and then they pull that chair back so that they can see the angle they want to be, their perspective, they choose that. They're taking up space. That is a confident person. The person who comes in and they just make sure they're not in anybody's way and they kind of lean back and put their stuff under their chair, for example, a handbag or a briefcase or a laptop, it's saying, I'm more subdued here. I'm not the star of the show. Now, again, I'm not saying you should always be the star of the show. That's not the point in a meeting. But I'm just saying that body language communicates attitude.
Turn towards the audience. What about turning away from the audience? What might that convey?
If you're up standing up to do a presentation and you turn away from the audience, sometimes that communicates, I'm going to be reflective here. For example, you can actually say, you know, nobody's asked me that question before. Let me give that some thought. And you sort of, you know, look up and then maybe even walk back to a slide and turn it off, turn off the projection and then walk back. You're saying, I'm very relaxed. I don't mind giving you a moment to pause. I don't have to fill every pause with words, but you're communicating with that body language, that direction is that I'm being very reflective and I'm being very intentional in what I'm about to say to you. For example, George, if you were going to ask me, what are several ways to open a presentation that shows confidence? And I said, you know, that's a great topic to consider in depth. What I can say about that, you see how I slowed down, I added pausing, all of that communicates. I'm not just going to shoot from the, we used to say shoot from the hip or shoot from the lip. I'm going, in this case, I'm going to be very intentional and give my words added emphasis and added thought. And that's based on the reflection that you see me making, my turning away, my looking up, maybe glancing at notes. That all says I'm intentional about what I'm about to say. And it tends to gain people's attention rather than lose it.
And what I noticed there, Diana, was that, yes, when you did that, it's like you go into a casual stance, casual gesture, pause and oh, that's a good idea. Or that's a profound suggestion. Let me consider. And you slow down your voice, and you applied more gesture, which suggests that you are being totally open and in the moment.
Yes, and very reflective, and that you're not just filling space with words.
Mm. And so whether that's in a meeting room or on a stage, it can work the same way.
Right. And even in a hallway conversation, you know, the boss calls you and says, well, how's the XYZ project going? If you just say, oh, it's going fine, that tells them nothing. And that tells them you didn't even give it any thought. But if you said, well, let me mention a key issue we're running into right now. Just that slow pause and the, well, let me mention the emphasis on your words, and all of that works together to say, I'm going to be very intentional. I'm not talking off the top of my head. So again, that body language, and whether you're standing, sitting, conversation, whatever, shows confidence. But there are a lot of other things you can do to be confident. I think to show confidence, you have to feel confident. Mm. And one thing that helps you in a presentation to feel confident is memorizing your opening and your closing. Now, I'm not advocating memorizing your entire presentation. That'll be terrible. It will sound canned. But to memorize your opening 1 to 2 minutes, or maybe it's a story that's 3 or 4 minutes, but have it down cold. And then, because that's at the opening when you're most nervous. Anytime you first stand up in a new audience, everybody's nervous at one time or the other. It just depends on how high the stakes are. I don't care if you're a billionaire walking into a big deal that's going to be 10 billion, you know, that there's some amount of nervousness there. And so that happens. You know, I'm not sure that this is going to land right. I'm not sure how they're going to react. That happens at the beginning of the speech more often than any other time. So by having that memorized opening at the very beginning gives you that confidence when you're tend to be shakier than normal. And then same thing at the end. You want them to walk away thinking, wow, that was high impact. That was dynamic. And the way you do that is remembering and understanding your closing line or two. Sometimes it might be 3 or 4 lines, but again, about your last 30 seconds at the end, you want to have it down cold so that you end and land that message very intentionally.
Have your opening and your closing cold, delivered intentionally. And even if between, you might have not come across as well as you want to, but if you have a strong opening and a strong close, that's what they'll tend to remember?
Yes, absolutely. The highest impact, of course, is the end, how you end. The first, the second spot is at the beginning, and the unimportant, or the less important, let me put it that way, the less important in the middle, that they'll tend to remember your opening and your closing. So that's why it's so important that your body language is in sync with what you're saying, and that you're confident that your ideas are very precise, clear, direct.
You gave us some idea earlier of some phrases people can use to sound more in control, more confident. Are there other phrases that help people come across to appear more confident?
I think using good transitions is really important because it helps people. If you think of it this way, if you have a page, and I give you just a page, a written document to look at, there are no indentations. All the margins are all the same. The print size is the same. There's no bolding. There's no underlining. You kind of get lost in that. But if I indent, show you some paragraphs, putting in headings, it shows you that I'm organized, and it helps you if you don't want to read all about this particular topic. You just stop in the middle of that paragraph, pick it up on the next paragraph, and you can pick and choose. Well, that's just with a written document. You can think how much harder it is for people to follow your oral presentation. And so to put in, quote, the paragraphs to help them see the structure of what you're saying, transition words and phrases are very important. For example, let's say I make a key point and then I say, let me give you a concrete example of that. The other day, blah, blah, blah. And then they're following, oh, she's in the example. They don't get lost in your major structure. And then maybe when you finish that example, you go back and you use the phrase. All right, number two, let me give you my second key reason for suggesting that we do X. By giving that overview, that transition statement, they know, okay, she's finished with reason one. She's building a case. She's given us reason one. Now she's into reason two. So those transitions, it could be However, which means I'm going to contrast something with what I just said. Or on the other hand, again, shows a contrast. But just using the phrase, let me continue with that thought for a moment. You're telling them, I'm going to add some elaboration here. I'm not making a new point, but I just want to add elaboration to what I've already said. All of those phrases help the reader comprehend the big picture of what you're saying. And without them, audiences frequently go off on little tangents, chase rabbits, and they get lost in the bigger picture of your whole message.
Mm. And I can see how those transition phrases link ideas together and show that you are organized.
Yes, that in itself tells people I have planned my presentation well. I have thought through how this fits together. I'm not just up here with three ideas I want to get across and I'm just throwing them out at random. It is structure is paramount to clarity. There's a huge link. And if sometimes you speak up in a meeting or you're doing a presentation and you hear somebody say, well, I'm confused here. I don't know what you, that tells you your structure might have been faulty. Not all the time, but many times that tells you the structure has been faulty. You know, they would be able to follow what you're saying. They wouldn't get lost in these little side trips. For example, sometimes you may want to chase a rabbit and you may say, this is going off tangent a little bit, but I think it's worth noting that blah, blah, blah. And you make that point. You say, okay, now back to our main interest here today. And again, it's like taking them, it's like you're giving them a guided tour through your presentation. You take them by the hand and you say, come back on the trail with me now. That was a nice little side trip we took there, but let's get back to the point.
Mm. And that's a handy phrase right there. Let's get back to the point. Let's get back on track. That was an interesting tangent. Let's get back on track because it's so easy for the conversation to go off in so many directions.
It is. And particularly when you get into the Q&A session. In the Q&A session and people ask you questions that are, well, somewhat related, but not really on your point, it's very valuable. You answer that question very quickly and say, back to my larger point, however, and then you make that larger point and keeping them on track. And the Q&A is, it's a key place that people chase rabbits.
Diana, how does one convey confidence when at some part in the presentation, the speaker suddenly has a memory loss, forgets what they're going to do next. And in that moment, they're probably not feeling that confident. What can they do?
Brain freeze happens to a lot of people. They're right in the middle. It's happened to me on stage in front of, 5,000 people. All of a sudden, I've lost my thought. I think one way to do that, let's come back and talk about notes in a minute, the kind of notes you should have. If you just have a keyword outline, you refer to it, you can get back on track by that. You say, just a moment. People don't mind that you have notes. That tells them they're organized, that you're organized, that you know where you're going and what you want to make. But if you stare at them too long, that's the problem. You look even more confused. In addition to glancing at your note, you can actually ask the audience. This is sometimes to see how engaged they are. You can say, I just lost my train of thought there. Mike, on the front seat down here, or just you call somebody in the red shirt, tell me what point did I just make? Ah, thank you. And just take it as a light approach. I remember speaking to all the governors. I had a keynote in front of all the governors in the United States. In the middle of that, I thought, I was speaking extemporaneously and I was giving them an example about arguments among their cabinet members and their, staff members. And I said, for example, let's say last Wednesday night, you got into this big discussion with your board members about, an example might be, this is one that happens very frequently. And I kept using those lead-in words, and I just could not think of the example I wanted to use. And so I walked down off the stage. I had a center stairs. I walked down off the stage and I tapped this guy and I said, tell me, what are you guys and your staff member, what did y'all argue about last week when you had your staff meeting? And the whole crowd just laughed and started applauding. And he said, we had a big argument about so-and-so. And I said, aha, that's a perfect example. I turned around and walked back on the stage and elaborated on such an example. So you can always ask your audience for help. It only registers in their brain that you are off track, you are nervous. If you act nervous, if you let it throw you and you're just petrified, if you're like a deer in the headlights and you start doing all these word fillers, and grasping for notes, that's what they remember. But if you are relaxed and you say, hey, George, what was I just saying about so-and-so? Oh, yes, that reminds me of the point I wanted to make. Get back on track. They think nothing of it. It sounds very normal, very natural. That's what we do in conversation with friends all the time.
And they probably, when you do that, they probably like you more because they saw that you were exposed for a moment there and you were okay right. with that.
Right. They saw your authentic self. And they identify, they think, that's happened to me before. Oh, I see how you got out of it. It's helpful to them, but it also is a way that you build rapport with the audience.
Mm. Diana, you have written 50 books and you use that expertise, what you've learned in writing 50 books, creating to help other people write their books. And you do that through your Boer Book Camp. Who's that for and what will they get from that?
Well, it's for anybody who wants to build their credibility, consultants, speakers, even a business leader running a division or a department who wants to build credibility for their product, their service. When I mentioned consultants and speakers and even lawyers, CPAs, white collar people who have an innovative approach, managers who have an innovative approach, and they think, I want to get this idea out to a larger audience. Those are the people I work with. And it's a 3-day event and I do it one-on-one as well, but I have events, very small groups to help people get the publishable idea. They have years of experience. Business leaders have years of experience, very valuable experience, but they don't know how to winnow that down and translate it so that it's usable by other people. And so that's what I do, help them make sure they have a publishable angle, and then how to put together a book proposal to send to a major publisher, how to make their pitch to an agent so they get representation, and then just explain the whole process all the way through the marketing of it. But it's a key way that business leaders can build credibility with a larger audience to share their product, to build their business. There are many entrepreneurial companies that started because and it really took off. Like I'm thinking of 37 Signals, the people who built Basecamp project management software. They launched that basically by the founders writing a book. Even Zappos now, I know that their founder is no longer with us, but when he talked about culture, he said, this is a new kind of culture that many companies could benefit from. So he wrote a book about how to build that kind of innovative culture. So it will promote your career, or your product, or your service by getting a book out there. Not just any book, not just a self-published book. That doesn't help much. But it's sort of like getting the Good Housekeeping stamp of approval when you sell it to a major publisher who says, we could have published any author on how to build great teams, but we chose this business leader to do that book because of their credentials. And that's why it lifts your credentials so dramatically.
So those mainstream publishers, they demonstrate credibility.
Yes, yes. It's like, let's say you walk in and you want to buy a new phone and you walk into some store and you see, here are the Apple phones, here are the Samsung phones, here are the Nokia phones, and here's a Bentley. What's a Bentley? You're not going to pick those up because you haven't heard of them. But when that has that brand name on it, like Apple or Samsung or Nokia, then that has credibility. And it's the same with a book being published with Penguin Random House or McGraw-Hill or someone. It says, this is a quality book. They could choose from thousands of authors who come to them with this idea, but they chose this author. And that's the branding that carries a lot of weight.
Mm, good, powerful advice. And that link is in the description below. Diana, as we prepare to wrap up, if you could sit down with a team leader who is trying to encourage their team of junior people be more expressive, participate more in meetings and express themselves honestly and openly without fear, what advice would you give to that team leader that they can do for their team to make them feel and come across more confidently?
The first thing is listen to them. If you're the leader and you don't listen, you have a pattern of cutting people off, changing the topic in the middle of the stream. That tells people you don't really care about their input. But that team leader, business leader, could become a better facilitator. And by facilitation, you can lead people who are more junior to have more confidence. For example, if you said, I want input from at least five or six of you around the table here about XYZ. I honestly want to know what you think as you've seen this play out in your area of expertise. And you frequently call on them and listen to what they say and how you comment after what they say makes a great deal of difference. So they get in the habit of speaking up. It's not a one-time thing. And, you know, every time you get together, the three loudmouths spout off and the rest sit there. You have to intentionally learn some facilitation skills to get that input. And if you look at someone and say, hey, Russ, we haven't heard from you on this. I'd like to know how you see this affecting your staff. Then that tells them you are really interested. You call them out by name to speak up. But learning to facilitate a discussion rather than being the one that holds the floor all the time and gives all the ideas and then says, this is what I plan to do. Anybody have a problem with that? You're not going to get a lot of feedback. But if you learn instead to withhold as the leader, to withhold your opinion until you hear from a lot of people and say, I'm going to take all those ideas under consideration. Thank you very much for the input. Then they learn in time later and the next time and the next time that you do value their input.
Good advice. My guest today is Diana Boer, reminding you that structure in your presentation leads to clarity.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.